This is Day to Day. I'm Alex Chadwick. Big news from the Supreme Court today as the term draws to a close for summer recess, including this decision: prisoners being held at the Guantanamo Bay Naval Base do have access to U.S. courts. These are accused terrorists captured in Afghanistan for the most part. Joining us to dissect these rulings are two legal experts. First, Slate and Day to Day regular legal analyst Dahlia Lithwick. Hi, Dahlia. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Alex.
And Walter Dellinger, he's a constitutional law professor at Duke. He's the former acting U.S. Solicitor General under President Clinton. Welcome, Walter, to the program.
Thank you.
We have three big decisions to start with. They all relate to the war on terror. So let's go to this Guantanamo case first. Walter, can you just remind us what this is about and tell us what the court said?
This case was brought by two Australians and 12 Kuwaitis who were captured in Afghanistan during the hostilities there after 9/11, and they were taken into U.S. military custody and taken to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where they have been held ever since. These two Australians and 12 Kuwaitis have filed for a writ of habeas corpus, which is a challenge to their detention. The writ of habeas corpus, as the majority opinion notes, is classically the way in which someone challenges the fact that they're being held in custody. It allows you to go to a court and say to the officials who are holding you, give an explanation of why I'm being held. It is, in some sense, literally the mother of all other rights. These petitioners were denied any access to the federal court in which they brought this suit. That court accepted the United States government's executive branch's argument that they were not entitled to sue because they were not U.S. citizens, they're Kuwaitis and Australians, and they were not being held within the United States. In an opinion written by Justice John Paul Stevens, the court ruled 6-3 that United States courts do have the power and the jurisdiction to consider challenges brought by these detainees at Guantanamo to the legality of their confinement. Executive imprisonment, the majority writes, has been considered oppressive and lawless since John at Ruddy Mead signed the Magna Carta.
Just to be clear on this, these two Australians and a dozen Kuwaitis, they're not saying, hey, you got to let us out. All they're saying is, we want access to a court. We want to be able to argue you should let us out.
That's exactly right.
Okay. We also have decisions in two cases involving U.S. citizens who've been detained as enemy combatants. The first is that of Yasser Hamdi. This is an American who is being held as an enemy combatant. Dahlia, remind us of the details of his case, and what about this ruling?
Right. It sounds initially like it's substantially similar to what Walter was just describing with the Guantanamo detainees. The difference is Hamdi was captured on the battlefield with an AK-47 in his hand, but he's a U.S. citizen. Like the Guantanamo detainees, he was swept into detention without any real meaningful due process. Unlike the Guantanamo detainees, it happened in a Navy brig here in the U.S. So he's a U.S. citizen being held in the U.S. and similarly sought the right of habeas corpus review, essentially said, I want to contest these facts that you are claiming against me that justifies holding me. In an amazing decision today, the court essentially said, on the one hand, it looked like it gave the administration a bone. It looked like it was saying, yes, the administration does have the right to detain enemy combatants, and that was one of the issues. Does the executive have the right to make these kinds of determinations? In an opinion written by Sandra Day O'Connor, the court acknowledges that, yes, the president does have that right, but then she sort of turns around and takes it away with the other hand by saying absolutely not to the proposition that based on that right, the detainee in question gets no due process. And what she argues for forcefully is that the notion that habeas corpus, as Walter says, is an old and an important right. It's at the core of how governments abuse innocent citizens, is by sort of locking them up and taking away all due process. And so she essentially says, this guy gets his day in court. But the really crucial part of this case is that she says that the Bush administration's policy of saying, we're just going to decide whether or not they're guilty and then we throw away the key, is not legitimate, that he has to be able to contest that fact in some kind of judicial proceeding.
Walter Dellinger, there's also another American, Jose Padilla, U.S. citizen. He was called the dirty bomber, arrested because there were allegations he was going to try to set off a bomb in Chicago. There now are all kinds of questions about what he was really planning to do. But he is another U.S. citizen held on these same kinds of charges. Is this also a writ of habeas corpus kind of case, or are there other things involved in his ruling, and exactly what is his ruling?
The Padilla ruling is one that's not of great significance except for Padilla. He brought his case in the federal court in New York. Custody was transferred to a facility in South Carolina, and the Supreme Court held, perhaps showing a lack of sympathy for Padilla, that he should have brought his suit in the federal court in South Carolina instead of in the federal court in New York. And so basically Padilla has to start over.
Well, so that doesn't sound like a very important ruling in the kind of the scope of the war on terror legally, but I think this must be an important day for exactly that question.
Shortly after 9/11, I was on a discussion at Duke about what the courts would do with the forthcoming war on terror, and my thought at the time a couple of years ago was that the court might be willing to readjust the balance between liberty and security and the direction of security. But what the court was not going to be willing to do was to let any other institution of government make the determination instead of the court as to where that line should be placed. At the end of the day, I thought then, and it's clear today, this Supreme Court is going to make the final decisions, and it's not going to cut people off from access to the courts.
Dahlia Lithwick.
I was actually thinking exactly what Walter said, that essentially what this court did was made a very strong statement affirming the power of the executive, but a stronger statement affirming the power of this court. This is in some sense a victory for a Bush administration, but ultimately the real winner today is the judiciary that really gets to make the last call in these crucial close cases.
Legal analysis and opinion from Slate's Dahlia Lithwick. Thank you, Dahlia, and also former acting Solicitor General Walter Dellinger. And we'll just tell our listeners that you can find a dialogue between Dahlia and Walter about these and other cases, indeed wrapping up the whole term, at slate.com. Dahlia, Walter, thanks for joining us on Day to Day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Chadwick, and this is Day to Day.